Broadcasting from Orchard Park, New York,
and Boca Raton, Florida,
it's the Freight 360 Podcast. From freight broker sales tips to sports talk, this podcast is all about helping you grow as a freight broker. We're your hosts, Nate Cross
and Benjamin Kowalski.
Let's talk freight. Welcome back, everyone, for another edition of The Final Mile, where we answer all of your questions. We've got four questions today. They come from a variety of places. So if you have a question for us, you can send it in as a YouTube comment. You can email us at info@freight360.net, or you can go right to our website, freight360.net. Freight360.net. Hit the contact button, and you can fill out a form to send your question that way. And while you're on our website, check out all of our other content, including the Freight Broker Basics course, for a full-length educational opportunity to learn how to get your brokerage off the ground and grow it successfully. And as a caveat here, if you're watching this video or listening to this episode because of the title, there may be other questions on here that are not part of the title. You could always check the description box to see every question we're going to discuss. So first up, the first question came to us from our Facebook group, and it said, what details should be included in a load posting on DAT? So typically for, I'll answer it generically for any load board because they tend to all have the same options. But what you're going to tend to see, the basics are an origin, which is going to be a city and state. Sometimes you just throw a zip code in there. A destination, same thing, city, state. Equipment type, so whether that's a van, flatbed, reefer, RGN, et cetera, whatever that trailer type is. You're going to also have an option for the weight. So is it a 28,000 pound load? Is it a 42,000 pound load? That stuff's really important because that driver's going to know the heavier it is, the more fuel they're going to burn and consume to haul that, which affect your rate. And then usually another required one is going to be the available date. So is it today? Is it tomorrow? Is it 2 days from now? But in addition to that, there tends to be some optional fields that you can really use to get additional information over. So there might be an option for the commodity, or there might be an option that it requires a team, or you could put a rate in there if you want to offer a price to the drivers. And then you'll usually have some like freeform text comment fields, which you can do a lot of cool stuff with. And I highly encourage you to use those comment fields if you have pertinent information that a driver should know before accepting a load. For example, we already mentioned team, right? You might say this requires a team drivers to operate for X amount of hours per day. You might want to include special requirements like a lift gate or tarps and the how big are those tarps? Does it require straps? Is it a driver unload? Driver assist in any way, shape, or form? So those are typically your basic data points you're going to put in a load posting. Ben, anything you want to add, or do you have any anecdotes on the comments fields? Those tend to be kind of the ones where people are like, why didn't you put this in here? You got anything there?
So correct. Yes. Like, and here's some of the advantages and disadvantages of each, right? Like, again, some people will post a rate. Some people will post the same load without a rate and see which calls they get to each, right? And again, like, it depends on the situation, I think, as to whether or not you put a rate in there or you just put a post with no rate to see how many calls you get. Because again, the pros are, hey, you're throwing that number out there, which means there's maybe some carriers that would want that load but won't call you because you're at 15 and not 16. And the reality is, like, you might be able to go to 16 and you might want to start at 15. So like, there are advantages and disadvantages to rates and no rates, right? Because some carriers won't call at all on one without a rate. And lanes are different and days of the week are different and different times of the year are different for each of those. So I play with those two to see what the responses are sometimes. The other thing is like the commodity, right? The real justification is like, you in some cases want to make sure maybe that driver has experience hauling a specific commodity, right? So that's like a reason to put it out there. A disadvantage though is if a carrier sees your commodity in your lane, say it's Jacksonville to Chicago, and another broker has Jacksonville to Chicago, like, they're usually going to call both of you and see which load pays more. And the question they use to identify whether or not both of you are working the same load for the customer at the same time is usually the commodity. That's why the carriers will always ask, hey, like, what are you moving? They're working and they should be doing this, right? Like, this is what makes a good dispatcher, is they're working all of those potential loads to move to see which is the best fit for time, money, and weight, to your point. So when they can identify the commodity, now they can compare which loads are really sometimes the same load or very similar, right? So there are advantages and disadvantages to putting the commodity up. But the most often overlooked thing that I think people should put in, which they neglect, right? Weight is definitely up there that I think people skip through or don't pay attention to, and it matters. The other one are like special requirements for sure. So, you know, just some examples, you went through a lot, but like open deck, pipe stakes, headache rack, coil racks, chains, straps, 8-foot tarp, 12-foot tarp, 6-foot tarp, right? Any of those you want to know and up front, because you don't want to waste the driver's time or your time talking to a carrier that doesn't have what you need, right? And exactly. It's just an easy way to kind of weed that out and to make it very clear. The other is dimensions, right? Because when you get very close to legal dimensions, right? Like, they should definitely be in there, because some equipment, it won't be legal to ship on. Some it might be, depending on the length, right? Or the height. That plays a lot into the open deck, which again is another overlooked category, I think. I think that's really, I mean, that really kind of covers most of it.
I want to add in here too, because you hit on dimensions, and one of the big things is if it's a partial load and a driver is going to attempt to consolidate two or more partial loads, you can run into a lot of issues on the dimensions or on the weight, things like that, because they might be good on one load or they're fine on another load, but when you put them both together, they might be overweight when they go to scale their axles, or they might not have the deck space from the front to the rear to fit everything on there. Because just because something is, let's say, 20 feet long, well, how much deck space does it take up? Is there an additional, bracing and tie down on the front or back end that's going to take up additional space that's going to limit their, how much additional deck space they have for another partial to go on there? So I agree. That's a good take on it. Let's move to our next question.
And then the last final point.
Oh, go ahead. Yep.
One final point is, this isn't going into the load posting, but you should certainly know this from your shipper, and that is the load value. And even though I wouldn't put it on a load post right now, because the higher the value, the more likely it is you're going to invite fraud into the scenario, but it's got to be one of the first questions you ask a carrier when you're talking to them, if you're over 100,000, is to make sure the carrier you're talking to has the insurance amount that covers the shipment. Your shipper is going to need that. That is the first question outside of the load posting that you should ask if you are over $100,000 in value.
Agreed. Next question, what software is available for freight brokers to track their loads by location? So this is a good one. Tracking has become also regular on the majority of shipments, especially, I know we just talked about inviting fraud, but GPS tracking is a very common thing now. And there's other things too that are not necessarily GPS, continuous tracking, but we'll start with the basics, right? MacroPoint is a very big GPS provider. Trucker Tools is a very common GPS provider. The ELD systems in a driver's cab track location, and they can oftentimes integrate in with either a TMS or with one of those GPS providers I just mentioned. I know the load board companies oftentimes have their own proprietary tracking available, sometimes included in your membership, sometimes at an additional cost. There are some companies out there that do single, like on-demand requesting a location from somebody via text, or like we had the guys from Quickscope on recently, where theirs was more designed to prevent, information from being released until the location was verified. But this question went back to, the common software to track loads. Check out MacroPoint, check out Trucker Tools. I'm sure there's others out there, and more will continue to be released into the marketplace, but those are your big two. You got any others for tracking as far as software goes?
The only thing I would add is, you covered everything I would have said related to software. The only thing outside that is, regardless of whatever software you have, you need to make sure you know where your trucks are, and you need to do that manually, either through an email or a phone call if you don't have software on a load. Like, you need to know where your trucks are. That needs to be documented. It needs to go into your TMS. That should be part of your day-to-day routines. If you got loads over the road, you need to know where they are every single day. And in some situations, morning and afternoon, to just make sure they're tracking to where they need to go and that they have no issues. Getting ahead of problems is the biggest way to create more time in your day.
Yeah, software's great, but it's not human. It doesn't necessarily, at least not currently, maybe it's getting there, but it doesn't have the intuition that humans have. And human conversation is also a great way to build rapport with your customers. So if you can call them, give them an update, or with your carriers too, right, to build that carrier network. Well, good stuff. Next question. Sure. What is the purpose of co-brokering? Don't we all have access to the same trucks? This is good.
No.
to an extent, hypothetically, yes. But the reality is, you're right. No, we don't. We legally have access to contract with the same folks based on our license. But the reality is, we've got relationships and sometimes pricing leverage based on the volume of stuff that we move. So we've talked about like the common ones. My company does a lot of full truckload, right? So I don't co-broker anything full truckload, but where we have co-brokered and found a lot of good success is LTL and expedite and intermodal, because these are niche types of equipment that are either, you know, very sensitive to the relationship with the broker that they're working with, and they're loyal to that broker. So they might be able to leverage a co-broker to extend that carrier network to somebody else. I've done that with an expedite company, or in the case of LTL, pricing. Same thing with intermodal pricing, right? If they're an expert in LTL, they've got a lot of volume that they're pushing through with R&L or with T4s or Old Dominion. I'm not going to get that same pricing directly. So I would rather work a co-brokerage relationship where I can take their cost, they mark it up to me, and I can resell it. And it's still cheaper to my customer than if I went and got it directly from that truck. So those are examples. You've mentioned a couple in the past about just capacity in certain areas, but what's your answer to this one about co-brokering?
I did a lot of this in the teens, right? Prior to the pandemic, like, I worked with Landstar's co-brokers, the ones that I had trust with, going back to our last episode. I've co-brokered with other large brokerages. I've co-brokered with smaller brokers. I did a lot of this when I was at TQL. And what I learned was all of the big brokerages all had co-brokerages with all the others as well. Like, the Coyotes worked back then with CH, TQL worked and had co-brokerages. And the reason for it is it's one, the relationships, to your point, for sure has a lot to do with it. But the other thing you said also, it's like where that freight was going at any given time, right? Because like, customers will use different brokers, but again, they tend to use a broker for specific things. So sometimes, you know, like, we would maybe have a load that we couldn't work on because we just didn't have the network for cross-border whatever at that time, maybe that week or that year or whatever, right? So there was a lot of co-brokerage, especially on really large volume accounts where we would work with other brokers, right? And it was fully transparent. There were agreements. Nothing was underhanded in any way. It was really just sharing capacity, and you kind of split the margin amongst both companies. They got a little bit, and then the one company sometimes got a little bit more. So they are and have been fairly common. They've gotten a very bad rap with the amount of fraud, but like, this was commonplace because like, sometimes like, I might've just had a customer that had a lot of volume that was, you know, Philly to Pittsburgh, and another broker has a customer that has a small project and they just need to access that capacity. Hey, sure, we've had these guys in our network running this lane a lot for our other customers. Happy to help you on this. You get involved in the project and it's over, right? So there are a lot of pros to even the way this used to be done in full truckload. It still can be done. It's just far less common now because of the fraud and, you know, what you're saying from a criminal aspect in our industry. But I think the term co-brokering gets a very negative rap when, if it's done correctly, it's just a valuable way for two companies to work together to get the shipper, the customer, what they need when they need it, right?
That's exactly right. And the one thing I know we didn't really, on this discussion here, we didn't talk about what exactly is co-brokering. So make sure to go check out our other content. But this is different from double brokering. It is completely legal. It's contractual on paper, signed by all parties, and everybody's in the loop about what's going on. So just make sure if you're going to be doing it, there's a contract, and you'll see verbiage that lists who broker A is and who broker B is. And to give you a very, very Barney style example, we'll say the shipper is ABC Steel, and we'll just use me and you, Ben. Let's say that that's your customer, ABC Steel. So you're Ben Logistics Freight Broker. I'm Nate Logistics Freight Broker, and you get the load from your customer. You give it to me because I have a truck, ABC Trucking, that can give you the service and the quality that you need that you otherwise would not have access to. So who does it help? Everybody. The truck gets a load that they want. I'm able to make a little bit of money off of your customer's relationship. You're able to make money and cover the load for your customer off of my relationship with the carrier, and the customer's taken care of and they're happy. So that's a win, 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 win right there versus a, you know, double brokering is much different. Good stuff. Let's go to our last question, and is what websites can I use to check and vet motor carriers before giving them a load? So I will start with the free publicly available data, which is going to be through the FMCSA's SAFER system. All right. So SAFER, it's an acronym. If you just Google FMCSA and you go to the company snapshot, you can type in a motor carrier by their name, by their MC or DOT number. It's going to pull up their public profile, which will tell you things like their authority, other profile information, maybe commodities that they might haul, their fleet size. Sometimes you'll see insurance. You can also get into the CSA system to see what their safety scores and inspection history looks like. You can see how they rank in driver fitness and in vehicle maintenance, substance, and all the other five publicly reported CSA categories. Now, if you want to take it a step further and make it very, very easy, if you've ever looked at our recommended products on our website, you'll see Highway is listed on there. It's a product that both Ben and I use ourselves. They are not a sponsor of this show. We do have an affiliate relationship. So if you would like to check out Highway, just make sure either let us know or let them know that we sent you there. But I love it. Basically, you can type in the same thing, name MC, and you'll get all that stuff that from the FMCSA, but it's a lot cleaner. And then you get a whole lot more on top of that. They manage the TIA watchdog program for reports against, anything that comes through TIA. They've got their own internal reporting for cargo theft, hostage loads, double brokering. It gives you insights based off their location and IP addresses. You can also see inspection history on a map, down to the VIN number and equipment type and the year, make, and model. So a really good snapshot of this motor carrier. In addition, if you have their onboarding and monitoring tool, Highway Connect, a lot of these carriers have integrated their ELDs to prove their location. You can see them on a map where they're currently at. So I'm a big fan of Highway. There's a lot of others out there, though, right? If you look at the My Carrier Packets, the RMIS, Carrier Assure, there's a lot of them out there. But I think the big takeaway is you want to make sure, and I know we covered this somewhat recently on another show, you want to make sure that you're hiring a carrier that is legal, right? So they check the basic boxes of authority, insurance, right? And then in addition to that, their quality. So you're looking at their safety score or safety rating if they are rated, their inspection history, their how they scored each category of the CSA program, and then just about anything else that's important to you and your customer. What's your take here? Anything I missed?
Now you covered a lot of it, right? Like kind of the steps I go through. One, I'm looking at, like you said, I'm looking at out of service percentage, driver violations, things like that to try to gauge one, are they legitimate? Like, do they have a license? And then two, like, how are they managing their equipment and their drivers, right? Like low maintenance, high out of service means they're getting flagged a lot. You know, lots of driver violations. There's a likelihood that something could happen with one of your loads, right? More or less risky. From there, like the next biggest thing is just making sure you're doing business with who you think you're doing business with, right? Like, and again, Highway is a great tool that vets and verifies the email addresses so you know you're talking to who you think you're talking to. That's a very vulnerable area to end up with a fraudulent carrier or broker that is pretending to be another one that is actually a legitimate carrier, right? So you want to make sure that whoever you're really sending the load to matches up or verified through some way, right? Whether that's the FMCSA's like listed email, or if it's a tool like Highway that is saying this. And again, even if you don't have the money yet, My Carrier Packets does a very good job of at the very least tying the emails to the FMCSA's verified emails for that account to make sure that like you are literally sending the Raycon to the only emails verified through these databases to make sure that if you get a phone call on a load and they say they're from an MC and they go, oh, just send it to my Gmail address, you should never be doing that now, right? You should at least use one way to make sure you know who you're doing business with, right? And again, I think Highway's the best in class at this. And I think My Carrier Packets does a very good job of automating this at a lower cost than at least vetting and making sure they have the insurance and making sure you're sending the Raycons where they should be going. Because again, this is a big area that is vulnerable to fraud and to people, you know, being imposters, saying they're somebody they aren't.
Yeah. I've used both before, MCP and Highway, both quality products. It's a preference thing. You're going to get a little bit different from each, but agreed. Yeah. And I think the big takeaway is do something. Don't just skip the vetting process because you'll find yourself in a lot of trouble. But great questions, great discussion about it. Continue to send them our way. We love to answer them. If we get a really good question in, we'll make an entire episode, our Friday episodes about them. Otherwise, these quicker, shorter ones, we try to get them all wrapped up into our Tuesday final mile as we did today. So, Ben, it was another good one. Any final thoughts?
Whether you believe you can or believe you can't, you're right.
And until next time, go Bills.
That wraps up this episode of Freight 360. Check out the show notes for links to anything that we've referenced on this episode. And make sure to visit us online at freight360.net to see our entire library of episodes, videos, blogs, and more.
And make sure to check us out on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel for daily and weekly tips and content. And if you'd like your question answered on the show, fill out the Contact Us form on our site, and we'll see you next week.